Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always very, very pleased to be able to come to you and be with you live and in living color. Well, moving right along, we are now in the so-called month of September, which, in case you don't know or hadn't heard, September actually means seven, so it's kind of strange, kind of interesting. But I like the number seven, and so with that said, I'm looking forward to this month, and certainly for what we are now calling self-determination September. There's always so much going on, and needless to say, it's kind of a good thing, what we're seeing, what we're hearing. It's not only a good thing, but I'm looking forward to it. I've got to say that, because we've been kind of in a stagnated mode for so long, and I kind of see some things moving forward the way I had hoped they would move forward some time ago, but again, fortunately, it seems to be happening now. So, you know, again, we are very thankful for that. At any rate, again, we want to welcome you to this segment of New Day Resurrection. And with that said, we're going to always give thanks and praises to our Creator. And certainly, I'm always very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Tonight's program, we are going to, of course, continue our dialogue about what's going on in Ferguson. And certainly, there's still a lot going on, so we expect to talk to Brother Yah very soon to get an update on what is going on and what's getting ready to go on. From what we understand, there is some activities that are being planned for this week. I believe on the 10th, there is going to be a shutdown of a highway, and that should prove to be pretty interesting because you know, in Ferguson, and, you know, again, we can't help but to salute them, and not only salute them, but to really be appreciative of them, because they're taking a stand that most of us have not seen for quite a while. And again, we are very, very fortunate to be in this time and this place to see it. I mean, you know, some have heard about certain things. I know, me being one, I mean, I wasn't really, you know, old enough in the 50s and early 60s and so forth to really see some of the stuff that was going on. But, you know, new people who were, of course, involved and, you know, was even married to one. But nevertheless, now to really be able to see certain things happening, I tell you, it's incredible. So, again, we can't help but to salute those brothers and sisters who are in Ferguson and in other locations too, but particularly right now in Ferguson, that are showing us that no matter what, you know, we've got to stand firm, got to stand strong. And even though we know that there's some difficulties in terms of, I won't say dissension, I'll say, you know, sometimes people have different ways they want to do things, and that's to be expected. I mean, we're not going to always agree on everything, and it's cool. That's perfectly fine. But the point being, to continue that work, to continue that struggle, I mean, it's incredible. The other thing I want to mention that we're very thankful for, and I hope I'm not going to speak about this too soon, and that is last week we had so much difficulties with our reception, meaning our broadcast had all these echoes and stuff in it. It was crazy. But, you know, we understood that that's how things often goes, and it did. And we just had such a difficult time hearing, you know, our people talk and provide information because of all the, you know, background kinds of noises and echoing that was coming through. It was absolutely nothing we could do about it because we don't own and operate all of the technology that we're utilizing. So, you know, I put it out there because, you know, again, I try to encourage folks to strive towards that, because at some point we need to be really controlling and owning and operating our own stuff. But at any rate, we had a lot of problems last week, and fortunately this week it doesn't seem like we're having that kind of difficulty. So, again, We give thanks. Again, moving along, we are going to talk more about what's going on in Ferguson, the upcoming activity shall we say, the demonstration of resistance, let's put it that way. That's coming up, I believe, on the 10th, and Brother Yah is scheduled to call in to tell us about that. The other thing that we want to take note of is yesterday, myself, Sister Pam Africa, her husband, Brother Roz, Alton Maddox, our brother Mike Graves, we were all there in New York, Staten Island, for the, I guess you could say, the beginning of a so-called trial for, you know, for the brother, for the man who took the video, took the tape, or made the tape, or was able to tape the actual murder of Eric Garner. I had the opportunity to talk with Eric Garner's father. I was sitting right next to him in the courtroom, and he asked that I contact his wife, who I will be doing this week. I'll be reaching out to her this week to get her on our program, if not next Saturday in the near future, whenever she wishes to do so, so that we can, you know, hear firsthand, more in-depthly, about what happened to that brother, who was, of course, choked to death by cops in New York. So, again, yesterday was a fiasco. It was a fiasco in the context of a so-called trial. Now, Philly is an interesting place, as we oftentimes convey to you when we go into the courtrooms here. Not that it's any, you know, real great thing to brag about or to make a statement about, but one thing I will say is you can hear what's being said. You know, whatever is being said, be it the prosecution, be it the defense, be it the judge, whatever, you can clearly hear what's being said. When we went into that courtroom yesterday in Staten Island, you could hear what nobody was saying, and really the second row from the front of that, you know, thing going on. And I could not hear what the judge was saying. I couldn't hear what the prosecution was saying. I couldn't hear what nobody was saying. So I found that very interesting that their setup was like that, that you didn't know what was really going on. At least I didn't. I had to try to piece stuff together, the little bits that I could kind of hear. So the bottom line is we were in there all but maybe 10 minutes, and with that, you know, was told that the trial would resume on the 31st. So that was deep. I mean, it was kind of expected, because usually when these things happen, when you go into those courtrooms and you know these people really don't want you there and don't want to deal with whatever it is that's being presented to them, they tend to create these continuances, such as in the case of Marissa Alexander, and certainly in other cases, they tend to, you know, have it going on, hoping that you get tired of it, or, you know, it's dragged out so long, especially if you're coming from out of town, you don't want to keep coming usually. So they drag it out. At any rate, this is what happened yesterday, a good maybe 10 minutes, and it was over. The beautiful thing was, of course, is that people showed up in a very large number, to the degree where they had to close off the number of people who were able to come in. It literally did fill, except for standing room. They wouldn't allow any standing room, but for the benches, which, you know, were all filled, for, except for one area, which was kind of interesting too. But the bottom line is there was definitely support from various communities. The brother was there, the male Latino brother who took the video was, and his wife and his family, and it was interesting to you know, hear their comments as well. But we're going to have Brother Mike Graves joining us very shortly, who of course is going to tell us about, you know, not only what went on in the courtroom, because, again, I could not hear everything, but also in regards to the organization that they work with, the Freedom Party, Certainly, Brother Alton Mannox did come. This was after the trial let out, and of course shared some words with us. But we're going to get some clarity on what is now going to be going on, because it was anticipated that Brother Alton would, in fact, be in that courtroom representing yesterday. So, again, we're going to hear what the next steps are in regards to that. Let's see. The next thing we're going to talk about is, and we're going to have Sister Omi Rahim, she'll be calling in very shortly, to give us a report about a very grim, a very horrific kind of thing that happened here in Philadelphia last year in January. A young black sister, female, roughly 5 years of age, was abducted, kidnapped from a school here in Philadelphia, and not only kidnapped, but raped, and not only raped, but handled in such a way that it's almost very difficult for me to even talk about it. This happened January 14th of 2013, and she was at that point 5 years old. She is now 7 years old, and I got a chance to watch and listen to some of the testimony. I did go to the courtroom to hear some of what was said. I can tell you that I had never heard of anything like this, and certainly one of the doctors who testified said that in her career she had never seen anything like this, the type of acts that were placed on this child. And apparently there were things that were used on her. Again, it's very difficult for me to talk about. I'm going to have Sister Omi to tell us more about that very shortly. She was there every single day. The trial has now been in effect for 2 weeks. And there's a female, a young female who is 22 years of age. I believe her name is Christina. I don't have the last name right now. But she is on trial. And has said, of course, that she was not guilty. But I'm going to have Sister Omi to give you the report and also her commentary, her evaluation of what is going on in that courtroom. It will resume this Monday, and I, too, expect to be there at some point this week. But, again, Sister Omi has been there every single day and has almost two booklets of notes that she has taken. And I can tell you she's done an excellent, excellent job in documenting this case. I'm going to also make some other comments about what's going on with that case, but I'll reserve that until later on in the program. Lastly, we are going to also give you some updates on the Rally for Justice that will take place here in Philly, which is, again, what we call keep the pressure on, meaning until Officer Darren Wilson is arrested and a special prosecutor is put in place, we're going to continue. We're going to make sure we continue to have our voices heard and our displeasures heard about what's going on in Ferguson. And with that, there is a blackout that is being called, or that's what's being called a blackout. We have some other words for it, and we'll give you information on that as well. And what that basically is going to entail, we're saying that starting on September the 8th, we're asking people do not buy anything. If it's not black-owned, if it's not being sold by black folks, don't buy it. We know that that may be difficult in certain cases, but for those who can, we encourage you to please attempt to do this. And after the 8th, and it's also being asked to run for 3 days, 8th, 9th, and 10th, actually, but we're going to also suggest to you that on Fridays, we're calling it Fast Friday or Friday of Fast, we're going to say also refrain from purchasing on Fridays, again, until Officer Devin Wilson is arrested. The cause or the reason for that is obvious. We've got to start making certain that, one, we begin to control our dollars a little better, that we direct them the way we want them to go, but also to begin to make some statements that as intelligent black folks, we're saying we're going to make certain that people start feeling this stuff in their pockets, because that's what they really understand. Rallies, demonstrations, complaints and all of that, that works for some things for some people at some times, but definitely not all people, not all the time. And certainly we know for some, don't think they understand is money. But anyway, moving right along, we're going to go to our segment that we've been doing for the past few weeks, and it deals with bringing you information about our history, our story. And with that said, we're going to get ready to go and talk with Sister Coker and see what she has for us tonight. And then after that, we should be ready to hear our first report, our On the Live Line report for tonight. But for now, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to bring in Sister Coker so she can share the history, her story, our story, and tell us about some things, some people, or events that we need to know about or become more familiar with. So, Sister Coker, do we have you?
Yes. Praising our Creator and thanking Dr. Randy Short and our Black Talk participants for being astute scholars and alerting us to the misrepresentation of Louis Leakey last week.
In the report,
Leakey was thought to be African-American, and your reporter learned that, regretfully, the Africana Encyclopedia of the African and African North American Experience, edited by Kwame Anthony Appiah and Henry Louis Gates, Jr., to be carefully scrutinized, especially in reference to political subjects. One would think this $100, 11-inch by 8.5-inch, 2,095-page book would be the honest answer to our historical needs.
Mm-hmm.
These past months, the Africana has been the main source for our story, allowing me minimal effort to provide information. However, we can continue with this reference and also learn how we oppress ourselves through it. Choice is yours. There is enlightening information in this well-crafted book. Tonight we celebrate jazz, also known as African North American cultural music. Jazz was a whole new cool and Black identity, exquisite, an inclusive lifestyle with its own royalty. I said inclusive with its own royalty. We had the Duke, the Count, the King, the Divine One, Lady Day, and with people with unique names as Satchmo, Yusuf Lateef, Illinois Jacket, Taj Mahal, all quintessential. But tonight will feature saxophonist John Coltrane, born September 23, 1926, in Hamlet, North Carolina, and departed July 17, 1967, in Long Island, New York. In 1943, Coltrane moved to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and he also enlisted in the Navy, where he played clarinet in Navy bands. In his brief 41 years, Coltrane played in many jazz groups, most noteworthy Miles Davis's quartet from 1955 through 1960, off and on. In 1965, John was inducted in Downbeat's Hall of Fame as Jazzman of the Year, with his landmark recording, A Love Supreme, being the record of the year. Second to Charlie Parker, Coltrane was the most imitated saxophonist in jazz history. He was a musical innovator. The National Academy of Recording Arts and Science awarded Coltrane a Grammy for Life achievement in 1991. Tomorrow from 1 to 7 p.m., there will be an outdoor jazz event at 18th and Diamond Streets honoring our leader of the 1960s jazz avant-garde movement, John Coltrane. And thank you, as always, for this opportunity to present to you men and women as John Coltrane. Thank you so much.
All right. And thank you, my sister. And again, if you're in the Philadelphia area, that location for that incredible kind of outdoor celebration, and we were told that if and even it does rain, they will take it inside of the Church of the Advocate. Again, if you're in the Philadelphia area, that is 18th and Diamond Streets here in Philadelphia. We know some of our listeners are not from Philadelphia, so we always have to indicate that if you're in this area, by all means, stop by. It's free. All right, my sister, I thank you again, and we look forward to next week.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Okay, family, we are waiting for, let's see, I believe we're waiting for Sister Omi to call in. And in the meantime, we may be ready for Brother Yah. Let's check this line. Caller, you're at 2948. Oops, wait a minute. Hold on 1 minute, 1 minute. 2948, hold on right there. Okay, we got you right now. 2948. Is this you, Brother Yah?
Good evening, peace and blessings.
Okay,
Brother
very
Yah.
Good. Yes, how are you tonight?
Doing okay, just still recovering. Just want to say that I appreciate the prince. I am extremely honored to be in the presence of beautiful, strong black people such as yourself, Dr. Randy Short, and others that I've embraced recently. I will say that that we have hope. We have hope. Ferguson is certainly a beacon of light, and you know, the world is continuously showing their love and support of what we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
On the 10th of September, we are doing what's called a highway. You know, I don't even know what to call it anymore, but a highway boycott for. Better terminology, I can't even think right now. Highway 70, we're shutting down Highway 70. Highway 70 shut down. Initially we were the Justice for Mike Brown Leadership Coalition and other organizations which we are part of agreed that we were going to do a 4.5 minute highway shutdown, meaning those individuals driving that day around 4:30 p.m. would stop for about 4.5 minutes in commemorating Mike Brown's death,
mm-hmm.
where he laid in the road for you know, for 4.5 hours. So it was symbolic to that. Every vehicle was supposed to stop for 4.5 minutes on the highway. If we're mm-hmm. still doing that, or just totally just blocking off the highway. Like last week, the supporters or the protesters or the people in the movement blocked certain highways with their vehicles, so you couldn't enter onto the highways. Okay, so that's something that did transpire on last week, but I think this week on the 10th, I think they're going to. Pretty much go with the 4.5 minute thing on the highway. So the announcement is going to be made. There's going to be a press conference, I think Monday, Monday at 9 or Monday at 10. I don't have the information in front of me right now. But we have quite a few things, projects going on.
Mm-hmm.
We are some of the committee members from Ferguson, myself included. The Human Rights and Justice Committee will be going to Connecticut, I think, on the 26th. We'll be establishing a chapter there, Human Rights and Justice Committee chapter there, and discussing some pertinent issues. Dr. Ansari will be one of the individuals going out to speak. as well, one of the featured speakers for that event. And I know we talked about Jersey. We'll be going to Jersey, and in September, October, and I think we're going to be in Philly. We're going to be in Philly. I think there's an event coming up real soon in Philly. I can't remember the dates. I want to say the 30th or something. Maybe before then. There's something big going on in Philly. I can't remember right now. But we're going to be there in Philly. And then we're planning on New York this year. So hopefully in October, November, be in New York as well. And just really, really letting our youth voices be heard. We had a meeting with the youth today of Ferguson. And no brothers that have been out there every single day, night and day, day and night. And bottom line, they're sick and tired of being sick and tired. They are they want change, and they want it now. They don't respect so-called leaders. They don't respect the Nation of Islam for their own reasons. They've had some issues, and when I say today, it's about five of them, including the sister that was shot in the head, grazed in the head, I should say, by the officers who tried to take her out. Sister name is she goes by the name Spook, S-P-O-O-K, and so so this is their position. But they are collaborating with the Human Rights and Justice Committee, and we are putting together a committee of putting together our board and committee members to one, raise awareness of what's going on, to begin educating the people on international law as we continue to get educated and groomed by scholars and doctors like Dr. Randy Short and Dr. Nsiri and others who are more advanced in these areas. And so, you know, I've been, guided under their tutelage. And I think that we will be fine. We'll be fine. We're going to begin training and educating again, in the matters of international law, dealing with human rights, and understanding what all that means. And there's plans to open up a T-shirt printing company there on to bring more economics to the Ferguson area. There's plans, discussions of just doing some other things there and really just shutting down Ferguson. There's plans of boycotting or buying in or doing a blackout or a blockout of everything that's not black owned, and we are strongly supporting the African Palace as a place of eating, your restaurant, and as opposed to some of the other places where we met at today. There's discussions of a community center, building a community center, perhaps where the Quick Trip right there, the infamous Quick Trip, was burned down. The youth have expressed an interest to build a Mike Brown community center. I suggested it should be a Mike Brown, Kajimi Powell community center. So the name is still kind of under scrutiny right now as to, you know, which direction it will be in. We're just really focusing on, economic empowerment and what that means, how we're going to go about doing that. We are putting together a youth rally, and we are putting together a, I think it's October 8th or October, I got to get the date correct. But we are asking parents to not allow their children to go to school on a specific day in October. I think it's October 8th here in America, not just Ferguson, but all states. We are asking parents of black parents and parents to keep their children out of school, that they have children of color, since they are treating us like animals, and so we want to hit them where it hurts the most. So we understand that some of these schools are getting funded from Connecticut, and we want to send a message to Connecticut, to that Board of Education and the Education Department across the world, that our voices will be heard, and you will respect us as human beings. And we demand our human rights, and that's essentially what it boils down to. Just so much is going on. So much is going on. With the youth rally, it's going to entail some hip hop, a positive conscious hip hop.
Okay, you're breaking up a little bit.
Some of the other artists, I think, 50 Cent, Youngblood had came out with a song called "Oh Shit" or something like that, and the brothers, they're going to be working with them and doing some remix type stuff, and really, doing a hip hop piece, a rally. Part of that will also include our youth, high schoolers. We are working on getting our high schoolers to do a walk out. So mm-hmm. we are encouraging, our parents to support that as well. So whether it's just going to be the high schoolers or the high schoolers and the college students, again, it's still kind of a little gray area, but we are certainly planning these things. And so within the next few weeks, there's going to be quite a few things transpiring, definitely within the next 30 days. Also, we're canvassing the community, the Ferguson community. I think it's, 21,000 residents in Ferguson, and mm-hmm. of that, I think 67% of that was black or African Americans. And so, anyway, I think it's like a 6-mile radius. So we're going to be in the community again, in Ferguson community, passing out a recall petition to recall the mayor, to recall the police chief, the city council, and eventually the prosecuting attorney, who cannot presently be touched with recall because he hasn't been in office this term for 6 months. So I think his 6 month is December 1st. That's when we could begin the recall petitions on him. We estimate that it's going to take approximately a year's process to get everyone out of office that we don't want in office. That's include the city council in Ferguson, the mayor. It shouldn't take long to get him out. We just got to get the, I think it's 32% votes from the citizens in Ferguson to get him out. And so we are doing a fundraiser. So we are asking support the community from the nation, from the world over, as it relates to what we are doing here in Ferguson with the recall petition. Dr. Insuri, he's helping out with that as well. And we'll definitely keep you all posted. We have the launch of Human Rights and Justice Committee, a website. We're hoping to have that done by Friday. So I think it's humanrightsjc.com is what it's going to be, humanrightsjc.com. And, we're on Facebook, Human Rights, JC, Human Rights. I think that's all I can think of right now as far as business. As I stated, I'm still kind of recuperating from the, I wouldn't call it surgery, but I think the tear gas stuff kind of triggered something internally where I still haven't fully recovered. And I was in a hospital yesterday for about 8+ hours, and they put a monitor down my throat and took samples to kind of see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so my throat's still kind of dry and shortness of breath and things. I'm just trying to take it easy. I don't even know what that means, because I've been out in the field, and I've been out, you know, talking, and I've been out demonstrating. I've been out meeting. Like, I live for this. Like, I'm not gonna die for this. I'm gonna live for this. Like, you know, this is part of who I am. This is what I do. Like, I'm not gonna stop until I stop. So it's like, it's in my blood. So, but that's pretty much all I could think of right now. That's everything, really.
All right, my brother. Well, if we can, we just want to see if any of our family listeners have any questions for you, because, again, it's always best that we are able to get information, you know, directly from the sources, from those who are right there, who are not only at ground zero, but who are actively involved in what's going on a day-to-day basis. Of course, we get the reports through the so-called news media, the commercial corporations and so forth, and we have to weigh that out with a grain of sand at best. But so what we're going to do now, family, if there's anyone that has a question for Brother Yah, please press one now. Mm-hmm.
Let me say this while we're talking about the media. The media here and media nationwide, and when we say media, we're mostly thinking of white press media. They have pretty much said that the citizens of Ferguson are basically just throwing tantrum tantrums right now. It has died, that they're not covering the story, that there's really nothing else to be done other than sit back, be quiet, and let the government take care of their own. So that's what they're saying right now. And, you know, you can kind of see it through the media. You read it, you hear it, you see. So what I've been saying for some time is we need to have black press representation. We need to only be speaking to black press about what's going on. If the media as a whole is not putting out the information that that needs to be put out there, and it's not benefiting us, so to speak. So that's one thing that we are doing, trying to get more black press to carry and to hear our stories as we dialogue and commentate on what's going on, giving our own narratives, because we're here, we're out there in the field, and, you know, we've had these concerns and these issues, and we've been victimized and all that other stuff. So that's just kind of where we are with it now. And that's it, really.
Okay. All right. Well, again, if there's anyone that has a question or a comment for Brother Yah, please press 1 now. And before we let the brother go, one thing that I want to, again, is commend you all on, you know, the great work that you're doing, and let you know that we certainly appreciate the stand that has been taken, and it has really inspired our people nationwide, perhaps worldwide, to see the kind of resistance that's being put up. Now, when I spoke with you earlier today, Bobby, I asked to mention, of course, it seems that you have flushed out all of the camera seekers and so-called Negro leaders and all of that. It seemed like they've kind of been flushed out, and if not flushed out, now that the, you know, kind of big hoopla is gone, so are they. Would that be a relatively accurate statement?
Yeah, a lot of them have gone. A lot of them have gone. You have a few still lingering around. You have a few vacateurs. You have a few people But to answer your question, yes, they most of them are gone. Most of them will be back when the media is here. But, I mean, you know, you have a few people still around, and they're going to be around. It's you know, so you just got to.
And so let me also reiterate the demands. Two of them in particular are still and will be.
The people,
we know
who's who. We know what's going on. And
okay, what I was getting ready to say is that, let me reiterate that the two major demands at this point is that, one, the immediate arrest of Officer Darren Wilson, and also that there be a special prosecutor appointed. Is that correct? Those are the two priorities at this point.
Yeah. I'd say yes. That's what was initially put out there with the Justice for Mike Brown Leadership Coalition. Those were two of the five demands that were put out there. The way things are going now, it honestly does not appear that the officer is going to be arrested. In fact, he has not been arrested. Doesn't appear that he's going to be indicted. He has not been. The prosecuting attorney has been meeting with the grand jury, has been presenting a case, this case, to the grand jury, has been presenting evidence, videos, eyewitness testimonies to the grand jury, and the only thing the grand jury was supposed to be establishing was probable cause. So the prosecutor, who has ties with the police and law enforcement agency, his mother, the law enforcement, his cousin, and all of that. So they're overwhelming the grand jury, and they're pretty much being coerced into making a decision when there's no need for a decision to be made as to guilt or innocence, just probable cause. Do we have the right person in custody? Is he charged correctly? You know, et cetera. They haven't even gotten to that point. So it's frustrating.
Right, and I really do understand that. But I think for the points of clarity that we need, in other words, you know, there are still people all over the country, our people, who are doing some form of actions. And so those actions have to be connected to what things are still needed, even though we realize it doesn't look like they're going to do A, B, and C. We still need to know what the demands are that our people are saying, regardless. We still got to put that out there. We've still got to push for it. We still got to make certain that level or that area of things is still being presented, regardless of what they do or don't do. We're looking at what is it that we want to say. Okay, so essentially, that's why I said, are those two things? In other words, we're doing a rally on Monday. Is that something that should still, is that a demand that the people still are asking for?
Sure. Again, as stated earlier, that is two of the demands. Those are in fact the demands that the people are still asking for. We're still seeking and asking for justice. We're still wanting and demanding that that officer be brought to justice, be arrested, indicted, charged first, second degree murder, whatever they're going to charge him with or not charge him with. Yeah, that's the goal. That's what we're asking for, correct.
Okay, very good. And that's what we need to know. All right, my brother, I thank you again for, you know, I know that you're not feeling at your best, and so I don't want to hold you, you know, any longer, but certainly feel free to let us know if there's any other information you want us to convey. As you know, we are always ready to do a special edition. I'm going to take a brief moment to let Brother Mike, I think Brother Mike is with us. I think he might want to holler at you real quick because we're going to bring him in to do the report. on, you know, the trial yesterday, but I want Brother Mike to have the opportunity to holler at you real quick. So, you, Brother Mike, your mic is open.
How are you, sis?
Oh, you know, always, always. As long as we can continue to do this work, always good.
Okay, well, good. Let me just say to our Brother Yah that it's always good to speak to you, and it's always good to know that the good fight is still being fought in Ferguson, which is actually right now the epicenter of Black America. And certainly we just, you know, give you not only greetings, but we just want to always encourage you to be at your best and to always be ready. And certainly we understand that you should, at this point, not depend, your movement should not depend on the white media, because they will, obviously they are part of the machinations of white supremacy. Therefore, they're not going to ever give you true coverage in the way it should be deserved. And now that, you know, the Trojan horses are back on other assignments, they don't have no need for the real direct leadership that's organically linked to the Ferguson community. So your movement should not depend on them to proceed. So it's good to hear from you, and stay strong. Always have at the root of all you do, always have those demands clear, so that the average person who might not be as politically clear as you understand what the movement is about for justice and what that means. So in that vein, certainly I wish you well in whatever we can do. And certainly if you come into New York, we'll make sure, definitely we'll hook up with you, you know, myself and other members of 100 Blacks and Law Enforcement, the United African Movement, the Freedom Party, so many, you know, various groups. Definitely looking forward to meeting you and the other brothers and sisters from Ferguson. So with that, I say, you know, peace and blessings.
Thank you, Vic Brother. We certainly appreciate all the support. It's greatly needed. We will be moving stronger than we have been moving, and just be on the lookout. Power to the people.
Yes, sir.
All right, Brother Yah. Again, thank you. Brother Mike, you stay right there. We're going to come back to you in a few moments. But wait a minute. We might have a caller who has a question for maybe both of you. I don't know. Let's check to see. We want to give this caller the opportunity. You have pressed 1, so let's see. Caller, you're at 1559. Did you have a question or a comment for Brother Yah or for Brother Mike? Your mic is open. 1559.
Good evening. Good evening, Empress Chi. This is Keisha. How are you?
Hey, Sister Keisha.
I'm doing well. I just want to give a shout-out to all of you guys. And I talked to Brother Yah this morning and confirmed this evening, Big Mike, that he will be here in New York as a featured speaker with United African Movement on the 22nd of October.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we definitely made that happen. And we want to thank Dr. Randy Short for putting us
all together,
form this coalition, because this is a human rights issue and it is global. So I want to thank Dr. Randy Short for doing that. And Empress T, I'm always promoting this program along with Community COP and Patrice Lee's program. And I would advise the listeners to continue to do so, because when we get our marching orders and when the clarion call goes out, you're going to need these programs to get your marching orders from. You're going to need these programs to get your daily intake of our plight here in the Americas and abroad. So it's very important that we continue to promote these mediums. And I just want to thank all three of you for the hard work that you do on behalf of liberation. And as long as I have breath in my body, I'm going to be there in the fight right along with you.
I know
You love it. It's good. It's good to hear your voice. I love how you carry. You carry it strong, and I appreciate everything that you do. Power to the people.
Yes, sir, brother.
Right.
Y'all have a good one.
All right, my sister.
Peace.
Thank you.
All right.
All right. And again, Brother Yah, I want to thank you, and I guess we will be in touch.
All right. Thank you, Sister. Peace.
Peace to you. All right, now, let's see what we're going to do. We were still waiting for Sister Omi to call in to give us that report, but since we have Brother Mike with us, we're going to go on to our next report, which, of course, is yesterday. Yesterday, there was, you know, what I call a fiasco, more or less, but I'm going to let Brother Mike tell you about it. We were in Staten Island yesterday, and, of course, that was the beginning of what, again, I call a very interesting kind of situation. Needless to say, you know, we see it all the time, but, you know, it's always good to have a reminder, and yesterday certainly was one. We were in there all but maybe 10 minutes, as I said, and the proceedings is to be continued as we thought it would be. Didn't think it would take 10 minutes, but we thought it would be continued. But nevertheless, I'm going to go back to Brother Mike, who is going to give you some insight into what happened yesterday and what we foresee happening in the future. Brother Mike, you got it.
Okay, well, we were all assembled in Staten Island yesterday, and some brothers and sisters like to call it Satan Island, but just so there won't be confusion, it's Staten Island, and those that don't know, it's a sanctuary, a white flight, a white supremacy. You know, the top bosses in law enforcement, that's where they reside at. A lot of people that control Wall Street and Midtown Manhattan, that's where they reside at. This is a sanctuary for a generation or two ago of whites who lived in Brooklyn, Bay Ridge, Canarsie, and other places, that as soon as they got these civil service jobs, that white flight occurred across the Verrazano Bridge to Staten Island. And this is why that so-called sacred edifice of the Verrazano Bridge was not going to be co-opted in any way by black folk. And the governor gave Reverend Sharpton that call that he will not allow black feet to march over that Staten Island Bridge. The governor made that crystal clear to Reverend Sharpton, and so that's why it turned from a march over the Verrazano Bridge to a caravan across the bridge, and just a regular march on a Saturday when no one was taking care of business. The offices were all closed, and they gave them that Saturday afternoon to talk for themselves. So that's the epitome of Staten Island. So we were there yesterday during business hours, obviously, in court, and the trumped-up charges they did not drop. If they had any principles about themselves, they would have just dropped the charges, but they did not. It's an adjournment to the 31st, and to those that don't know, 24 hours after the medical examiner had reached the conclusion that Eric Garner was the result of a homicide. You know, his death was the result of a homicide. Within 24 hours of that, the NYPD had arrested and charged Ramsey Order with having a weapon, unlicensed weapon, and the weapon mysteriously had no rounds in it. The weapon was a .22, and you cannot find a young person in their 20s with a .22 weapon. That's something from generations ago that people carry. It's an old Saturday night special. You know, this is the era of the 9mm weapon and fully automatic or semi-automatic weapons. And to have a .22 revolver is a weapon that's so archaic, you know, realistically speaking, that to find one on a young person and be empty, you know, you're just really reaching. You know, it's a real quantum leap for something like that. So in any event, he was arrested for that, and the tragedy of it all is that he was in jail for a while. And we were trying to, put together the funding with so many other things we're doing. The United African Movement led the charge. The United African Movement / Freedom Party led the charge in putting together the funding. And right before we were able to accomplish the goal. Mysteriously, it was paid, and we do not know to this day who paid the bail.
Wow.
It's anonymous. It's been characterized as anonymous because it's an embarrassment. It shows mm-hmm. you, it's a sad commentary. It's for the state of affairs in New York for this man to be charged as such. So it looks so ugly, and the fact that if you can put thousands of people in a march over there, and yet you're ignoring the very person that developed the evidence in the Eric Garner murder, it's mm-hmm. him solely who has the evidence, because you can't go by the other people who were standing around and saw the entire event. After 4 centuries of this so-called experiment called America, you know, you have to at least acknowledge that one white man's word can dismiss 10 black people who saw something.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't even entertain the fact that people were there, and even though they saw 8 cops run roughshod over Eric Garner and take his mm-hmm. life, you mm-hmm. can't say that, oh, well, a lot of people saw it. It don't matter what they saw it. The deference given to one white man, and I'm not even talking about police officers. I'm just talking about just a white man. You can't prove racism on your job if a white man is racist to you every day and racist to 10 other black people that's on your job and giving you hell. You can't prove that he's a racist until you can find a white person on your job that's willing to verify what you're saying. You can't get an EEO complaint or anything else done until a white person verifies and says that this person is racist or something. So the crucial evidence came from Ramsey Orter when he videotaped the murder of Eric Garner. So this man has been ignored. He was lifted up at a funeral by Reverend Sharpton, who was on mm-hmm. Broadway at the funeral talking all this stuff, and mm-hmm. then left Ramsey Orter's left or right flank unguarded, and he was being picked up by the police department on what we believe to be trumped up charges, and then left to sit there in the jail. And if you think that this is just an oversight by Reverend Sharpton, Reverend Sharpton always goes to where the money is. In the whether it was the Sean Bell case, where he was with the fiance, as opposed to with the parents, even though they have publicly sort of smoothed things over a little bit, he divided that family. I've seen him do it in the murder of a black police officer, Omar Edwards, who was killed by a white cop off duty after work. He gravitated towards the wife, separated her from Omar Edwards' mother, caused the turmoil. I mean, this is something that a reverend, a man of the cloth, would not do. A man of God just don't operate that way. Moved her out of the house. She, in turn, did not even know where her grandchildren were and could not just talk to them and hold them, and they just disappeared. This was Reverend Sharpton's doing, and he has divided families consistently and always goes with the side of the family that's going to get the money.
Right.
And so to just cast off Ramsey Orter like an old sack of potatoes, it's just disgraceful, and the New York City community and the nation needs to know that he is. We had a rally here yesterday, and not a court date, which turned into a rally after, and not one person from National Action Network was there. So they're obviously operating on his orders. This is so disgraceful. You have a chapter of the National Action Network right there in Staten Island, and I personally know the sister who's in charge of that chapter.
Yeah.
So I know that the orders came directly from Reverend Sharpton. Since United African Movement and so many others are involved, do not show up there leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
So they operate directly on his order. So there again, the family is divided. And so Alton Maddox has volunteered to come out of not a self-imposed hyenas, a system-imposed hyenas, mm-hmm. where he's not suspended. He's not, you know, in any event, he has not been able to practice law. He is developing a strategy as we speak to be able to start practicing again, and was going to do that yesterday at the request of Ramsey Order, who wants Alton Maddox to be his attorney. So that strategy is being developed, and hopefully with this adjournment, that by the 31st, the road will be paved clear so that Alton Maddox will be able to represent him, and we can think of no better person to represent Ramsey Order than the attorney at war, Alton Maddox. So what happened yesterday, what it was adjourned, he was asked by the judge, did he have an attorney, and he made it clear that he wanted Alton Maddox to be his attorney, and they mm-hmm. said, do you have money? And he said that he was basically said he was indigent and that he did mm-hmm. not have any money. So the mm-hmm. judge in turn said that there will be an 18B lawyer, so they will pay a set amount of money for him to have a lawyer. So that should all happen in these coming days. We should know who the attorney is, and mm-hmm. that person will be able to represent him on the 31st. And it's just a real disgrace, and at the risk of repeating myself, I just have to say again that you cannot treat the critical person in this inhumane murder, the one who can really slam the door shut on all eight cops, because 100 blacks, we don't want just Pantelio. We want all eight cops locked up.
That's
we
fine.
Want them all indicted. We want them all on trial. We want them all convicted, and then we want them all sentenced. You know, with the sentence commensurate with their actions, because they killed that man, took him away from his family. So this is what we want to see happen, where you have Reverend Sharpton, who's only concerned with, after the trial, putting in a lawsuit and basically getting paid. And I'm just a little upset right now, so mm-hmm. I don't mind saying that he has a clear relationship with the powers that be. Not only is he a cut buddy with the governor, the governor's his boss, he has a relationship with the governor, he has a relationship and helped make de Blasio mayor of New York City, he has a relationship with the five district attorneys here in New York City for the mm-hmm. five boroughs.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why we know he has these relationships is because of past events that happened. When Omar Edwards was killed in Harlem on 125th Street and 2nd Avenue, when we had a meeting with Robert Morgenthau, a legend in law circles, he was the most powerful district attorney in the country. When we met with him, and we were going at it, we meeting 100 blacks in law enforcement care, and we was going at it with him over not having a trial
mm-hmm.
for the death of Omar Edwards. His top prosecutor admitted to us we were going at it back and forth, asking him questions that he couldn't answer because Omar Edwards was shot in the back, and yet they told the public that he was shot in his chest because mm-hmm. him and Dutton had their guns trained on each other. His top prosecutor slipped and said to us, he said to us, 100 blacks in law enforcement, it's obvious that you have not had a conversation with Michael and Sandy. That was his response to us. Now, mm-hmm. Michael meaning Michael Hardy and Sandy meaning Sanford Rubenstein. Those are Sharpton's two attorneys.
Wow.
The white one, Rubenstein, and then the black one who's the front man, Michael Hardy. So when the district attorney said that to us, saying that basically was telling us, y'all only ones that are fighting this fight. Nobody else is concerned. We've already smoothed this out with Sharpton. Why are y'all making up? So I'm saying Sharpton has a deal with the wife. What's the problem? And we said the problem is that that's a black cop that was laying in the street, treated like a dog, laid there for close to a half an hour before you took him to the hospital. And so we, similar to the way Michael Brown laid there for 4.5 hours. He was killed at 12:07, did not reach the medical examiner's office until 4:37. Mm-hmm. So he laid there in the street. Omar Edwards that had a chance to live, and he laid there for in excess of 25 minutes, close to 30 minutes, before they took him to the hospital, Harlem Hospital. So we've seen this kind of work before, and I'm saying that to say that Reverend Sharpton is truly unprincipled to leave Ramsey Order at the machinations of this system, where he is the principal reason why black America knows that eight cops killed this brother for no apparent reason. Mm-hmm. It clearly shows there was no resistance on his part. It clearly shows that he never swung at anybody. He was not in a boxing stand. He did not threaten in any way those police officers' safety. And the video shows everything, and you even heard him saying, I'm tired of this. You heard him saying, obviously, you know, I can't breathe. You heard him saying, I wasn't doing anything. The onlooker said that he just broke up a fight, and that's because of the video. And that video was critical, and this brother who took the video, he didn't know it at the time, but he put his life in danger
by doing that because
the police department don't play. They do not play, and they will do whatever it takes to protect membership. And so he opened up a can of worms that he was not prepared for. Him and his family, you could see that he's a nice, mild-mannered person, him and his wife, and they're ill-prepared for what's coming.
Right.
So this is why, and obviously in the Latino community, they have characterized him as a petty criminal.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to put the truth out so that even in turn Latinos can support him, because they were not present in the courtroom yesterday.
Right.
But Reverend Sharpton knows full well what he's doing, and I'm just upset, really upset with him right now, because not one member of the National Action Network was there in the courtroom for the person, the critical person who can put away those eight cops. As a matter of fact, without him, there's no case.
You know, Brother Mike, I'm going to tell you, and this is going to be very interesting as we watch all of this unfold. I was talking to Brother Yah earlier, and, you know, in talking with him, mentioned how there are so-called leaders who were ousted out of Ferguson. Well, I've been saying for the past week that while that has happened, some of those same people are being paraded around the country, and Philadelphia is one. Sharpton is coming to Philadelphia next Saturday on the 13th, and will be a part of someone who is very well known and very, I would say, respected here in Philly. But it's such an interesting kind of thing when you start piecing this together. Kenny Gamble is holding some kind of leadership thing next week. Now, one of the things that we've been talking about for several months now is this issue of gentrification. And certainly, you know, there are cities that do need to be, some changes need to occur. Needless to say, I mean, over 50 years or something like that, every city, especially of a certain nature, needs some kind of upgrade or whatever. But what we also know is that these people have gone butt wild in our communities in particular. And I'm saying that to say that some 15, 20 years ago, the location here in Philadelphia known as South Philadelphia was obviously changing, just like Harlem, where you started seeing this influx of other people start coming in as the neighborhood began to kind of go into a dilapidated state intentionally, where houses became abandoned for whatever reason. Bottom line, a lot of that property in what we call South Philadelphia was bought up by Mr. Gamble and his company, Universal Companies, and as a result, deals were made with the city to rehab a city property with a partnership kind of situation, et cetera, et cetera. And we're talking about blocks and blocks, okay? Now, these properties, which were maybe somewhere between $25,000, maybe up to $50,000 at best, now is going for $200,000, $300,000, and so forth. Bottom line. That whole area is now going through not only a regentrification, but a relocation process. Now, how am I connecting the dots? Well, next year is a presidential election. Now, interestingly enough, Philadelphia will also, I'm sorry, not next year, it's 2016. Next year, Philadelphia goes through a mayor election. So, let's really connect the dots. So everybody's parlaying right now, because this mayor's election is getting ready to come next year, and most of the city council seats are up for grabs. So, we know that a lot of people in Philly, and I'm saying this, family, because this is probably going on in your city too, whether you're aware of it or not, but those who are, let me introduce you further to the game plan, because I'll be in Newark on Thursday. We do a monthly session there called Meeting of the Minds. The same thing is going on in Newark. Even though they already had their election and they did get Ross in, it's still some BS going on, trust me. Bottom line. So here in Philly, they're maneuvering. Now, Saturday, as I said, next Saturday, they'll be bringing in Sharpton, Brother Mike, and family. Why? Because what we saw in Ferguson, for the most part, from the commercial standpoint, made it seem as if he was such a hot rod in Ferguson. He spoke at the funeral and blah, blah, blah. So now he comes to Philly, and because Philly has become so weak, because these people have become such butt kissers, and if you have some money or some juice, they will run behind you like white on rice. So now, what do we have going on here? So before you do, Brother Mike, wait, hold on, because this is important. This is why I want you to also talk a little more about the Freedom Party, because my point being, the Democratic Party in this city and the Republican Party in this city are now getting all the Negroes together so they can start selecting who it is they're going to back for these city council positions as well as for the mayor's position. And all of this is a year before the next presidential election, because this is how they plan stuff. So now, going back to the Freedom Party, this is so obvious why we have to develop and create our own parties. I know some of you are saying, oh, hell no, I don't want to deal with this election thing and all that. Okay, fine. But for those who do, we've got to look at some alternatives. Brother Mike, you got it. Go.
Well, let me just help you out a little bit. First of all, to the people who has no faith in electoral politics, fine. I can concur with that. That's fine. But there's the election going on without you. It's not like if you don't vote, there's not going to be an election. It's going to be an election. And people are going to be put in positions of power. So if your garbage is not collected on time, if you find improper zoning rules in effect that can lead to ethnic cleansing or what's commonly called gentrification, when those things occur, it's going to be because you have the wrong people in place. You didn't vote. I think that there's a need for a Freedom Party. you have to remember that there are power people that are in play that Reverend Sharpton sleeps with that are much higher than Gamble and these guys that made their money
sure.
in the music industry. So,
sure.
The former governor is Reverend Sharpton's cut buddy. You know, he's a MSNBC advisor. He's always on Reverend Sharpton's show. What's his name? The former governor?
There's Ed Rendell.
Rendell.
Okay. Who was also a prosecutor.
He's a former prosecutor,
prosecutor.
And you can tell that some of the most devious white men, that's their claim of fame as a prosecutor. You know, once in a while they might come up through law enforcement, but the prosecutors, the way him, Giuliani, those types.
Right, that's
so
right.
So you have a former prosecutor who made his way up to the highest level you can in any state, the office of governor, through how many black people you can put away. So at the highest levels, there are no fights between white Democrats and white Republicans because they both agree to one thing, and that's white supremacy. So they might have an argument here and there about who has the best Negroes. You know, they'll argue over, well, my Negroes are better than your Negroes. They had those frank discussions on Sunday. And they'll pull out all these Negro conservatives and then black folks, and then the Democratic Party will pull out, you know, the Obamas and the Jesse Jacksons and all of them. And they'll have a real conversation about who's the most well-adjusted and who's the most reliable. Twiddly D and twiddly dumb. So on the highest level, there are no real fights, especially
right.
when it comes to power, you know, or
right.
white supremacy. This is why they can redline and redraw districts without a fight, without any public fight.
Right.
Because they're going to do things where there'll still be Democratic representation, the Republican representation, and basically it'll be white. In this city, most of the officers should be held by blacks. But, you know, they have it cut in such a way, Governor Cuomo, Reverend Sharpton's buddy, things up in such a way that we don't have proper representation in Congress. We don't have proper representation in City Hall. And I'm just saying that's not an accident. It's the same thing in the state of Pennsylvania and all these other places likewise. Rendell smiles a lot on TV, but you can look and see just how vicious he is, and you can look and see that he was part and parcel of that Rizzo machine. So
absolutely. And with that said,
so we
remember,
have to understand.
I'm sorry, Brother Mike. Let me just reiterate one thing. I remember, he was also the prosecutor or one of the prosecutors during Mumia when that was all going on. Okay, very, very
absolutely.
Key. Now, hold that point, Brother Mike, because I think I see Sister Keisha, and I want to bring her in on this dialogue as well.
Okay.
I think this is Sister Keisha. Sister Keisha, do we have you?
You got me.
All right.
You got me. Let me tell you, I had to run upstairs. Excuse me if I'm out of breath, because I have my speakers in the window. I got the block listening to this right now. But I just want to say what Mike is doing tonight, this is an expose. I think you, Sister, and Eutrice Lead are running a competition right now, because you two have nailed down the biggest exposés in black news within the last 3 months. It's unbelievable. But how do we combat that? Everything that Mike has laid out, everything that you have explained, how do we combat that? I propose this, that during this month, while we are boycotting, now we continue to patronize black businesses. I will propose that every one of you who visits and frequently supports a black business, go to that black business owner and say, we would like you to donate $5 a month to various organizations, UAM, you can use it for Empress Cheese Program, whatever. You donate $5 a month. That is now pulling in black business into the political arena. These are the people that are going to have to fund us. So
that's
we have
right.
to reach out to them. So I propose that during this month of this boycott, every black business that you frequent, that you ask that proprietor to donate $5 a month.
Sister Keisha, you are so on point. Do you know we created something with MWM called In the Black? And by the way, family, if you're here in Philly and you come down to the rally on Monday, what we're doing is we've begun to register black businesses because we don't want to just tell people buy black. We want to tell people to particularly buy black from those who support our campaigns.
Right.
You see,
wonderful,
because
wonderful.
See, we've got to be a little more astute in what's real. Now, of course, we're going to say buy black in general, yes, absolutely. But at some point, we got to look at, okay, now who's really talking black, being black, and trying to help our people? We want to make sure that we direct our people to them more, a little more specifically. So what we're saying here is in our In the Black campaign, we want to register you so that we can help promote you, so that we can get, if you have a discount that you're offering, we'll help push that, et cetera, et cetera, and help create these various components. So our In the Black association is primarily geared to businesses who want to make a difference in the community as well as expand their business, but also to help build a more community business relationship. And note, we called it In the Black. Why? Because in finance, and note, I didn't say economic development. I said in finance and in wealth building, there's only two ways to go. You're either in the black or you're in the red. If you're in the black, you are obviously moving forward, prospering, advancing. If you're in the red, as in neck, never mind. But if you're in the red, then obviously you're in a deficit. So we've got to start being more in the black. So, sister, you are right on point.
I'm loving it. Mike, I always say, Mike, I just want to remind the people that I'm always saying, once the sisters get it together, the jig is up for everybody. I'm loving it.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Now, what I wanted to suggest is that a guy like Gamble, who made his money in music, that's all well and fine. You know, that was a very strong musical experience, you know, TSOP.
Doubt.
It's no doubt about it. That it was comparable with Motown or with Sax.
Right.
All of them were different parts of the country, all very powerful that contributed to the art forms that we gave to this country.
Right.
I would just say that, you know, that white power has never had a problem with giving out money. Money is something that's not very important to them. It's important, but not very important to them. So they can make a Michael Jackson, someone who doesn't know who he is, can make him a millionaire, multimillionaire, or close to a billionaire, and they can do the same thing with Oprah and so many other people. They have always, it's a long history. You know, Stephen Fetcher was rich. Jack Johnson and all of them was rich. So it's not like it took Oprah or Magic Johnson to become millionaires. We had millionaires going back a century.
That's right.
You know, but the thing is, didn't have power, but had riches, you know, so they can enjoy that money only in certain circles. So Kenny Gamble started entering into educational projects. Reverend Sharpton was involved in educational projects.
Right.
But it was all for the privatization of schools, taking money out of schools and making education for profit. So I know that Gamble was a part of that. Sharpton went over the country with Bloomberg.
That's
and
right.
with the former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. They
That's
were
right.
all over the country.
That's right. Absolutely.
Selling privatization of education. They took that all over the country. So
That's right.
this
That's
is not Gamble's first thing. So once you go mainstream, trust me, they know who the players are. So this is why governors from all over the country will invite, once Bloomberg or a person like that says you're okay and you pass that smell test, you're okay in their books. They don't mind making you rich. So they'll put Reverend Sharpton on the radio 7 days a week, on TV 5 days a week. They'll do these things for a gamble, Kenny Gamble, because once one of them say you all right, you all right. So if Rendell says, look, you okay, if he says that in Pennsylvania about any black person, they're okay, then that comparable governor in Mississippi or Alabama or in St. Louis, Missouri, they're going to know that these people are okay. They're on board. They're part of the team. So it's not a surprise that you would get this type of response from Gamble or anybody else. It's not a response that you can have a Nutter, you can have a Wilson Good and all these cats. It's predictable. We should not be surprised at these types of things because they've always occurred before. There's somebody who they'll produce. If Sharpton goes tomorrow and he's no longer here, they'll have to create another one. It wasn't hard to create him. He's not that talented. He's just an entertainer. They'll just get another one. Hooping, he didn't start hooping. Hooping was around before he was even around. So they can get another hooper in a minute.
Right.
So we should be clear on that because this gentrification that's going on, ethnic cleansing that's going on all over the country is a form of war. And they have people that look like us, unfortunately, that will make us put our weapons down. And our attention will go down with it, and then we will be open for attack and assault. And in these particular cases, tyranny.
Right. Let me share with you how slick and how very interesting this all is. This past December here in Philadelphia, Mr. Gamble and his crew, and you're right, they have several charter schools now, not just in Philly, by the way, which we're going to another time, to show you how the so-called education thing, which we also know is incarceration pipeline kind of situation, but that's a whole other topic for another time. But let me just give you a prime example as to how smooth and how meticulous this stuff is. This past December, here in Philadelphia, we had something called Kwanzaa-bration. Kwanzaa-bration.
Really?
You know who hosted and sponsored it?
Who's that?
Who?
Mr. Gamble and the Universal Companies and about 25 corporations.
Wow.
Kwanzaa-bration. The people loved it.
That's a form of when they giving you money, they're going to make you disrespect your culture. They're going to make you bend over and pull your pants down, you know, and this is just what they do. This is par for the course, you know, and this is why once you get in bed with them, they will embarrass you on occasion, so you just have to just take the insults. I mean, I remember when the Haitian crisis was actually going on, Reverend Sharpton told everybody in New York that he was going to Haiti because, you know, he's going to go to wherever the cameras are. And when he said he was going to Haiti, Bloomberg embarrassed him and said, you're not going to Haiti. You know where Reverend Sharpton went? You know where Reverend Sharpton went?
No.
He went to London. He went to London. He was told everybody he's on his way to Haiti because he wanted to be where the cameras are. They just had the earthquake and all that stuff. So Reverend Sharpton wanted that international attention because he's trying to recreate the life of Dr. King. That's why he's done the Edmund Pettus Bridge. That's why he's done, you know, a recreation of Freedom Summer 64. He's done these marches. He's done the anniversary of the March on Washington. He's trying to recreate Dr. King in our lifetime, but he's doing it following the pattern of Jesse Jackson claiming to be Dr. King. So this is what we're dealing with. So we need to be mindful of that. So these corporations that he's in bed with now, they demand so much from him. So even when he says he's going to do, like, Haiti, he's going to go to Haiti, Bloomberg tells him you're not going to Haiti. He says it publicly. Instead of giving him a private call to, you know, at least allow him to keep some dignity, he says it publicly. You're not going. He told the New York City community publicly that Reverend Sharpton is a common, has a common effect on his city. In other words, he's keeping black folks in check. That's what Malcolm talked about in the message to the grassroots, that this current crop of leaders are there to control us. They're not there to lead us. They're there to control us and hold us down.
That's right.
So
that's right.
He's on assignment now, and if that assignment has reached Gamble, we should not be surprised, because the money they're going to offer him, the lifestyle they're going to offer him, is a lifestyle that you can't give him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not satisfied with what you can give him. Obviously, he's used to working with blacks. They had a very strong black music company. But the fact is, we can't give him that kind of life that he wants. We can't give Reverend Sharpton the kind of life that he wants, where he goes to hotels, spend $3,000 a night, and he will take the presidential suite intentionally, which he has done, and he will spend $25,000 a night. If they say, if you take it tonight, you're gonna have to keep it for the whole weekend. He'll do it for those 2 or 3 days just to show me I'm the man, and he's done that before. So I'm just saying, we can't give these people that type of lifestyle. We can't do it. And that's what they demand. They get so arrogant after a while that this is what, you know, we have a situation, and stop me if you feel that I'm running on, sis. But let me just tell you, there's an independent, you know, talking about education, Ali McLean has an independent black school that raises up scholars.
Mm-hmm.
She went to Reverend Sharpton a few years ago since she's running on fumes, and doesn't charge the black parents much to educate their children. And she went to him for a contribution. You know he wouldn't give anything? Now, if you're going to spend $15,000, $20,000 in one day and you're going to take a plane and ride an executive class on that very day, you know, do the plane and the hotel, and you're going to pay an exorbitant amount of money, it's just play money to you, and you can't give her $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. And wouldn't give her a dime. And I think at the time she only wanted like 5 or 10, whatever he could do.
Right.
And that's
right.
Nothing to him, but he won't give it to her because that's just the kind of guy he is.
That's right. That's right.
So, at that time, he's running all over the country with Newt Gingrich and Michael Bloomberg. And even Obama admitted, even Obama said, that when they were in his office, Obama admitted that he kept staring at them, saying, I would never have thought I would have Newt Gingrich, who's a Confederate to the chief, a stone-cold conservative, I mean Confederate, and you have Michael Bloomberg, you know, a white supremacist, and you have Reverend Sharpton all in the same room, talking about education. They're on the same page on education. It doesn't make sense.
That's right.
So there's a master-slave relationship there, and you had, obviously, you know, you had Obama entertaining their nonsense, a privatization of schools.
Mm-hmm.
And here you have an independent black school, Ali McLean, you know, Sankofa Academy, that's poorly funded, not being funded at all, and I'm just saying that, you know, she's not charging the parents a lot. Here you have, and Keisha is one of the instructors at the Freedom Retreat for Boys and Girls.
Right.
Reverend Sharpton ain't never said, you know what, here's $20,000, here's $50,000. Here you have a 20-year track record of not one child being arrested, being a problem. They're all upstanding. They've all gone on and got college degrees. And you would think that somebody like Reverend Sharpton would say, well, you're an example of what an independent black school is about. Here's $50,000. Here's $100,000.
That's right.
I mean, he gets these checks from all over, from Black Enterprise and all these other corporations and Bloomberg and Levy, you know, all these hedge funds are giving him millions of dollars, you would think that he would give the Freedom Retreat for Boys and Girls $50,000. Say, here, take this, and if you need more, let me know. And Jesus is an instructor there.
That's true. That's true. And my daughter is a graduate of Sankofa Academy. But it is really, the hammer is really has really come down on us, and we only have ourselves to depend on one another. We only have ourselves. Let's do for ourselves, and let's get in this fight because, you know, my big brother Mike, he's always educating me, and he really is my big brother, for real. He often says that this is not a war. Actually, it's a slaughter because in war, both sides are fighting each other. We have to get in the fight to make it a war so that we can have a victory.
Oh, wow. That's, sister, that was just, I mean, totally poignantly put. Well, family, I want to thank both of you for not only sharing and bringing forward some kind of energy that in this day and age is so very much needed, but I want to thank both of you for remaining committed, remaining strong and diligent in all that you do. And bringing about that kind of clarity, again, that we need for today. You know, I think, you know, with this 100-year, this centennial of the Honorable Marcus Garvey, I'm going to dare say that I think at least, if not the whirlwind, part of it is here because our people are starting to rise up, stand up, speak out in a way that I certainly have not seen in this day, and so there's something going on. And again, I want to thank both of you for.
Well, sister, let me thank you. Hold on, sister. Let me thank you because I didn't get to say that. I want to thank all the people that came from Philadelphia the other day because
that's right.
You, Ramona
that's
Africa,
right.
Pam Africa, Brother Roz, and everybody else that came up. We want to thank y'all for coming to New York to support us and. Thank you all so much, and that's true leadership and commitment when you can for a court date that you know might just last 5 minutes. For y'all to come all the way from Philadelphia, to come all the way to New York, we want to thank you, and we are indebted for you to come up at short notice for something like that. So I would be remiss if I didn't thank you for coming up, and we thank y'all for sharing some words with us at that impromptu rally after we got out of court that day. So we thank y'all so much for coming up and definitely wish you Godspeed and the strength and perseverance that it's going to take because, as Keisha pointed out, we got to get in this battle because right now it's tyranny, it's a slaughter, and we need all hands on deck.
There's no question about it. And I'm hoping that both of you will be able to stay on for this next segment because as we talk about war and battle, you all know that one of the things that I am very, very adamant about and just, you know, always going to stay on, and that is the violation of our women and girls. We're getting ready to bring a sister on who has attended every single day of a trial that started approximately 2 weeks ago here in Philly. There was a 5-year-old little sister who was abducted last year, January the 14th, from a school, from a school here in Philly, walked right out and was missing for 14 hours, was found the next day. This young sister was not just raped. The things they did to her are things that, as I said earlier, I can't even really speak on it, and that's why one of the reasons why I wanted this sister to report on it, because again, she's been there every single day. She was there when the child went missing and came to Philly. She don't even live in Philly. So again, when you, Sister Keisha, you, Brother Mike, talk about people being committed, this sister lives in New Jersey. And heard about what was happening with this young sister and came to Philly on several days after she was found and has since then been in trial every day and has taken notes that covers almost three notebooks, okay? That's how on point she has been in this case. And I'm saying this again, family, because this is a case that everybody needs to pay real close attention to, because, one, this is a female, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Don't get confused. If you're doing something to harm our children or our women, I don't care who you are.
That's right.
So don't think
that's
I'm just
right.
going to come down on the men, on the males. This is
that's
a female
right.
who went into the school and dressed in, now note again, had on Islamic garb. So she was fully
mm-hmm.
covered, except for her eyes. So I'm saying we got to be real clear about what's going on in our community, about
mm-hmm.
the behavior, about the deceptions, and all of that. Because, you know, we got people walking around all the time with African garb on and different jewelry and stuff on, talking about
that's
all
right.
kinds of stuff, and they ain't about none of that for real, for real. So
mm-hmm.
so here
mm-hmm.
is a clear example of some stuff. So hopefully you two will stay with us as we bring this report. Brother Mike, in particular, I would like to hear from your expertise, your critique about what you're about to hear. And Sister Keisha, as my sister, as my warrior sister, we need your help. Seriously, seriously, we need to sit down, because I am putting together the African Women's Army, clearly.
Mm.
Mm.
Okay,
mm.
And I need to talk to you about that, because there has to be training, and it's not just a physical thing that we're talking about. For those of you who just had a serious crunching of being, it's not just, because I know some of you did, but it's okay.
That's right.
It's
that's
okay,
right.
Because it's all good, because we's Harriet's daughters, too. All right, and
right.
I'm Annette and all of that. But we're talking about a holistic thing here. You know, you can have an army of, you know, whatever, although it ain't a whatever, but y'all get the gist. It's not just about the physical. It's about, it's holistic. And so as I talked with my sister, Akia, last week, who is the mother of a young brother, 16 years old, that the cops jumped on and pushed his testicles to the point where, you know, it ruptured. I talked with her last week. I called her the other day. And what we're learning is that our sisters need support
mm.
when certain things happen. So even when things happen to our sons and our men, the women need support. So Sister Keisha, I'm calling out to you. And all of our sisters, we need your help, and I'll give you more details in a few moments. But for right now, I want to bring in Sister Omi Rahim to share with us what she saw and heard and observed during these past 2 weeks in court here in Philadelphia. Sister Omi, greetings. Thank you for taking the time to join us this evening and, you know, for sharing with us you know, your report and your commentary. Please begin where you feel you like.
Okay. First of all, I would like to just clear up one thing that I didn't miss 1 or 2 days in court
because
I was in Aruba and Curacao. So when I did get back the very next day, you know, I've gone every day since then, from after the Labor Day until yesterday. Trial will continue tomorrow, I mean Monday at 12:30. So it'll be
okay.
a late, you know, those who want to come, it won't be 9 o'clock, it'll be 12:30.
Okay.
And as I walked in, I walked into the courtroom on Philbin and 15th Street, you know, in Philadelphia, of course. I noticed
mm-hmm.
that the jury appeared to be, it was pretty mixed, you know, it's pretty mixed racially and culturally. You see different,
mm-hmm.
It may be about, I think, those stuff. Four black women, maybe four white women, three black,
mm-hmm.
two black men, three
mm-hmm.
white men. It's a lot of alternates. They have like different 9 alternates, and they have been using them already. I don't know if it's the stress that they're going through, that they're not, you know, all coming back, but I'm noticing that it's not the same people there each day, you know. And so far, the prosecution's putting on their case. The defense
mm-hmm.
has not started theirs yet. Although when it started, they thought it would have been a 2-week trial, you know, but it's already been, like I said, 2 weeks, and the Commonwealth is still putting on their people. So, so far, who's testified? So far, the FBI agents who got the warrant and arrested, you know, the young woman, who was, I think, 19 then. She's 21 now. The police, you know, the Philadelphia police have been interviewed. Daycare center where the girl worked at, the daycare owner, and the assistant who was to pick up the young girl from school. She testified. Also, one of the most deep testimonies for me was the doctor who examined the child, you know, for the sexual assault. Her testimony was really very, very touching. At one point, they made the spectators leave. They made us leave court, and it's at the jury stay. It was too graphic to show everybody. And I guess, you know, for dignity and, you know, personal reasons, they didn't show that to us. And what I understand is that, like, one man put his head down. Many used their tears to wipe off their faces because it was so gross what had happened to this little baby, you know. I say baby, but she's 5 years old, still a baby, still a young girl. So they were teary eyes. Even I understand there's a security guard in there, you know, looked at the floor. He couldn't even look at it. That's how graphic it was. They've also interviewed the girl's aunt. Well, her name was Christina. They've also interviewed Christina's aunt, you know, whose house the abduction was supposed to have taken place in. They interviewed her aunt who lived there and the aunt's boyfriend. They were on trial yesterday, as well as some cousins of the family. A very damaging thing came from the girl's aunt yesterday, you know, who said she believed from the pictures that was taken in the school and of the child walking out of the school that it looked like her niece. You know, they asked her who it looked like her niece because she had the aunt's coat on. The aunt said that was her coat that she had on. And the aunt said when the girl walked up the stairs, she had something thrown across her shoulder like a laundry bag or something. And it's just so for the aunt to be in the house and not, you know, the dynamics of the relationship, that she didn't even realize something was different going on with this girl this day. You know what I'm saying? And we talk about helping women and giving women the help they need. Listen to testimony from the aunt and from the cousins and from different ones. This girl was sexually abused by her father from 4 years old up. Never got any kind of treatment. She just went shifting from one home to this family to that one and ended up living with the perpetrator, her father, her own biological father, who molested her and did horrible, serious things to her. So, you know, a wounded person hurts others. A hurt person hurts others. Not to justify, of course, you know, what Christina did to this child, what she allegedly did to this child was correct by no means, but this is the pathology of somebody who's been molested themselves. They molest others, male or female, you know? The trial, I got kicked out of court yesterday because I didn't stand up. only for about half an hour.
Okay.
It's very interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what the defense attorney, Mr. Harrison, puts on, because I understand the girl's going to testify. And from what I've seen so far, she had just to have some deep, deep stuff because it, so far it doesn't seem to be much of a reasonable doubt. You know what I'm saying? This is very interesting. I advise all those who want to come out to definitely come out because it's going to be history. This is a high-profile case and definitely going to be history and hopefully change a lot of things in the Department of Education because this should have never, ever happened on anyone's watch. They were doing their job the way they should have. No one is to walk into a classroom and just tell a teacher, I want to take her out to breakfast and just take their child out. You know, that's crazy. So when they do their civil suit, you know, of course she has her, you know, her attorneys for the civil part. And when this is over, I hope he just takes them to it. I hope he just gets what he has to do because that should never happen. And maybe this will teach them a lesson.
Sister Omi, the day that I was there, I got a chance to look at the videotape, as you did, of the interview. You know, there was, of course, the person that was interviewing the young sister, and she was describing what happened. The other thing that we saw was one of the police officers who was a part of the crime scene unit, and he went through to tell us, you know, to tell everyone about what the procedure was, the different evidence that they, how they got the evidence and so forth. The one thing that stuck out, and I have to say this to everyone because I want you all to really get what I'm getting ready to say so that we put forth a greater effort in protecting our children. The one thing that the police officer pointed out was that they were able to get a stick or a pole or what could have been like, you know how you have like a mop and, mm-hmm. and a handle mm-hmm. to the mop or the handle to the broom? Well, mm-hmm. this had apparently been broken off. And based on what they had been told about the case, once it happened, when they went to the house, they kind of knew what to look for or had some idea of what things to look for. So when the description of certain things was given to them, they did in fact look and indeed found something that was rather long and was like a handle from a broom or a mop.
Three poles.
I'm sorry,
three
say
poles,
it again, Sadone.
Three poles. One was 3 feet, 5 inches. One was 2 feet and some change, and one was the handle from an ice scraper. And they were
okay.
all taken and given DNA. However, no DNA was found on any of them. Now, when the young girl said that, the girl told her, put a hand over her mouth and don't cry. She said, don't cry. This is going to hurt, but don't cry. It hurt me, and I got used to it. She covered her mouth, and this little child said she felt like a lot of toothpicks were sticking her up her booty.
Yeah.
So the toothpicks, what she might have thought, might have been the sharp, jagged edges of those broomsticks. That's how, you know, when they did surgery on the child, of course we got a colostomy because the surgery on her insides were so messed up and so jammed up from however they poked her with. For whatever reason, it sounds like they have surgery. Yes, anesthesia and everything. But the only DNA that's been found so far, they've done DNA on those poles, they've done DNA on the rugs. There were three rugs and stuff, but the little girl said there was a rug in the bathroom, so they did DNA on two of the rugs. Now, ironically, one of the big rugs, a little Hello Kitty rug or whatever it was, she threw that away the next day. You know, her aunt said she threw the rug away, and she asked her why she threw the big rug away. It had been washed, and she said the girl told her she threw up on it, and that's why she threw the rug away. But that may have had a lot of evidence on it as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
On the T-shirt that little girl was found in the park, the T-shirt had DNA around the collar, had the girl's DNA around the collar, as around the bottom of the T-shirt with fecal matter on it. That was the child's DNA. But that's the only piece of evidence that they have DNA of the alleged kidnapper, abductor, and molester. They have a
mm-hmm.
DNA on that T-shirt. So probably when she picked her up and carried her to that park and left her in the park by herself on that cold 33-degree rainy night in January in the park under a sliding board, her DNA will carry her probably back on the shirt. You know what I'm saying? From her rushes, carry her to that park and let her go.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And she dropped her off in the park and told her, if you see anybody, scream and yell help, which, you know, the child did. And thank God, our brother Nelson Mandela, how ironic is that, his name, Nelson Mandela was going to work that morning, and he heard her calling from the park. And he went to the park, and he saw her there, you know, took off his jacket and his hoodie and put wrapped her, you know, in his breast and called 911, and the rest has been, you know, history.
Okay. Sister Omi, I want to thank you for your report. And as you all can tell, she took meticulous notes because she could tell you the diameters and so forth and so on. Again, I'm raising this issue as we reach October, And as such, I will be again declaring October as Black Women's Appreciation and Awareness Month, where every day we will be doing something to assist our sisters of all ages, of all religions or whatever. But the thing I want to also note is that if this had been a white female, you would have heard a lot about this.
Mm-hmm.
Been hearing a lot about it. The fact that you, most of you, I'm sure, are just hearing this or maybe just heard some blurb about it at some point clearly indicates to you that, again, we've got a lot of work to do in making certain that our communication networks are, you know, brought up to the level that it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
That said, one of the things that we'll be working very diligently on is connecting the dots even further as it pertains to communications. So as Sister Keisha just said in talking about Community COP, we're going to have a new website going up soon, and we want to make certain that we start listing the various types of media outlets and so forth that are independent, that are on point. We want to make sure that people will have a better accessibility of those types of information. Okay, Sister Omi, again, I thank you so much. I'd like to hear, well, first of all, if you have any closing comments, please feel free to share that with us. And then I'd like to hear from Brother Mike and Sister Keisha briefly, because we're almost out of time, but we can continue this next week. As a matter of fact, again, I'll definitely make it down to the court again this week as well. We will definitely keep all of you abreast of what's happening and continue to build from there. Sister Omi, your closing words, please.
I'd like to thank you for having me on the show. Thank you for sharing Each One Teach One. And I hope there's been something to inspire some of your listeners to come to court and support the family and support the case. Because we have to find out, you know, if this girl did this, we have to start getting help for people. Start getting people some real, real, real help, because she's not alone. Many, many women, many Black women have been raped and kept in silent about it because we're afraid of what people will say, what the family will think, or they may think, you know, I asked for this, I shouldn't have been there, you know, it was my fault, and they keep it to themselves and they suffer silently. And we have to break that silence because it becomes a perpetuation of that behavior on somebody else. And I pray to God that no other child ever has to suffer like Nayla did, because one was not giving the resources, you know, and the love that she needed at the time that she was going through the same thing. So thank you so much for having me, and I will listen to the sister and brother now.
All right, thank you. And family, we want to remind you we're going to lose our internet stream in about 60 seconds, so if you want to continue to listen in, if you're listening via internet, just call 646-652-2232. You will be able to continue to hear the podcast. Again, 646-652-2232. Sister Omi, again, thank you, and I'll see you later on this week.
Okay, God willing. Salaam alaikum, everybody. Peace and love.
All right.
Thank you,
Salaam. Okay, Sister Keisha, comment.
Wow. This is the first time I'm hearing this story. And if you would be so kind to just email me or text me the particulars so I can let the people here in New York know what's going on, and, you know, put out a clarion call for people to show up at the courthouse there in Philly on behalf of this young sister. And rape is very real in our communities, and everybody turns, well, a lot of people turn a blind eye to it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an issue that we have to deal with. One of the things I learned from some of the young sisters who have attended the Freedom Retreat for Boys and Girls is just sexual assault on them. You know, when they're riding the subways, you have grown men just gawking at them. And, you know, it is a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we really have to get on board. And our fight is real. You know, our people are mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have to deal with that issue as well. But I want to thank you for having this medium. And as I said before, as long as I have breath in my body, I'm going to always promote this show, as well as others that I feel that our communities need. And I'm glad it's podcasted because while my neighbors are going to church and to the mosque tomorrow, they will be hearing the replay of this
That's
show
right.
in its entirety.
All right. Give thanks, my sister. Brother Mike.
Yes, I would say to the sister, and hopefully she's still listening, that
mm-hmm. she's still here.
Is nothing wrong, that it is nothing wrong with standing up in court so that you can catch everything. Sister, what I've heard tonight, it tells me that you're a war correspondent. And
mm-hmm.
certainly
Absolutely.
we need war correspondents. If it's anything we don't have that's missing that maybe we had at one juncture in our history, is real journalists. Now, I don't know whether you characterize yourself as a journalist or not, but you're doing a better job than anybody in the black press has done, because if there's a place where this story should be, it should be in the black press all across
mm-hmm.
the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we shouldn't be covering Susie and everybody else and Becky and everybody else. We
That's
need
right.
to cover these things that are germane to our existence. So you've done an excellent job in these, you know, however graphic it was, the details, you've done a great job in chronicalizing this. And my head was spinning while I heard these graphic details.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just say that certainly there's a sickness, there's an infection that we are getting from being around these Euro-Americans and our sojourn here in America. And certainly it's reflected in what you just laid out to us. Now, at the same time, there's an assault on black women, and they are the fastest rising. They have the highest, fastest rate of incarceration
That's
of
right.
any group, even more
That's
so
right.
than black men now.
That's
so
mm-hmm.
We have to be mindful of that, and we should never be confused by Arabic gear. I want to be clear on that, because somebody dressed up like an Arab means absolutely nothing. And
nothing.
I
right.
repeat
That's
that.
Right. That's
to be
right.
dressed like an Arab means absolutely nothing, because you're not an Arab. So, you know, you'd have the first question, why are you dressing like Arab? You're not an Arab.
Ooh,
you know, I mean, there's a difference. Sometimes a person is dressed like an Arab, and we think they're in African attire. It's not African attire. I mean, there's a clear war, a long war that we can chronicalize of Arabs on Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they helped break the back of Africa, which was open the trade routes and open things up for the Europeans. So, you know, because a person is dressed like an Arab and say, Assalamu alaikum to me, that doesn't mean that I should not be focused and be clear and watch all of their moves.
Exactly.
So, I think, you know, we need some clarity on that and some mm-hmm. real education on that. And, you know,
right.
there's a difference in an African philosophy and an Arab philosophy, because
mm-hmm.
neither will the two meet, because they are totally different. So I would just say that I think that your work is excellent, and I wish we had 1,000 more like you. If we had at least five people like you in every state, we'd be in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
we need people to report what's going on in our community, and then have, obviously, the courage to tell that story. You know, you get the information, and then have the courage and wherewithal to tell a story, and then you have to have a venue similar to this one where you can get that story out. So, you know, while thanking you, sister, for your excellent journalism, we have to thank our sister Empress for providing a forum for you to be able to get that information out to people.
That's
cause
right.
I didn't hear nothing about it. I just heard about that there was a 5-year-old sister that was killed, and that this case goes back a couple of years, and that's all I knew. But these graphic details, the black community worldwide should know, which means we need a vibrant black press, which we don't have, because
right.
they're in the pockets of white America. So we have to really thank you so much for that work, and obviously we thank the drumbeat in this particular case Sister Filet's forum that we can get these ideas out. So if somebody's listening in St. Louis and other places in L.A., Chicago, and these places, now they know more about it. So if you get that information to Keisha, I mean, she sends it all over the world. So that's the kind of stuff we need, because we have to, information is valuable, and we have to know on this plantation what's going on. And so the other plantations will know, because this plantation policy is going on all over the country. So whether it's Gamble doing something here, whether it's Reverend Sharpton doing something here, at the behest of Cuomo, Governor Cuomo, and so many others, we have to be able to tell these stories and have the heart to stand up and tell the truth, because the same way they got people that are fully prepared to run Sharpton out of Ferguson if or when he comes back, there should be some people to let Sharpton know, or Gamble or anybody else know, that that this business as usual is not going to be conducted on this particular, at this particular time. So we need truth tellers, and we need people to chronicle our history. We had griots before, and right now, Sister, whether you wanted to or not, you are one of these griots that's going to have to be able to recall all the facts and be able to teach our people what's going on.
And tell our story and not his story, right?
That's right.
Right.
And,
Absolutely. And if I may,
before we close out, again, you know, the Million Woman Movement is now up and rising, and to give you all some insight, and it's going to hit on some of the things that have just been said, one of the things that we're waiting to hear from Mumia Abu, our brother Mumia Abu Jamal, well, we requested of him to do a correspondence course, because MWM is enacting the Mumia Abu Jamal School of Journalism and the Ida B. Wells Project. So we're waiting to hear back from Mumia to let us know if, in fact, we feel pretty comfortable in saying it's going to happen, but we're waiting for the official word that Mumia will conduct a correspondence course in journalism, and particularly investigative journalism, but also the type of journalism that we know he, and I feel safe to say that only he, at this point in time, can convey. We want to do that correspondence course, because that way we can raise up our own journalists, our own media people, and so forth, and at the same time continue to fight for his freedom. All right, and so, again, we're just waiting to hear back from him to confirm when we can literally begin, and that way those who are interested in learning or fine-tuning their skills, they'll be able to do it from none other than Mumia Abu Jamal. So that's one of the things that we have put in place for the Million Woman Movement and for our community at large. The other thing is that here in Philly, there are very few independent anythings, and certainly not stuff that's talking very pro-black or African. And here there's something called the Our Black Comeback Center, which I am a family member of. And the Million Woman Movement has now partnered with one of the few independent, when I say independent, I'm talking about no grants, no corporate sponsoring. Classes are going to be held starting September the 25th, the 25th. Registration begins this Thursday. And so, and interestingly enough, one of the classes is storytelling, would you believe, or griot telling. That's one of the classes. But also drumming, stilt walking, natural foods prep, and home repair, minor home repairs, things of that nature. Those classes, alternative education is what we're talking about. And so those classes will be held. And then on the 13th is a lecture coming that's going to focus on bringing you real African history and culture. That's going to take place at the Black Comeback Center, which is located at 2427 York Street. This is a brother, sister, a husband and wife family that has dedicated themselves to making certain that there's a representation here in Philly that's going to speak up and stand out and make certain ancestors are represented in the way that they ought to be. So we'll be telling you more about that. If anyone wants more information, please feel free to contact us at National MWM at AOL.com. Again, nationalmwm at AOL.com. Brother Mike, give us the community cop information again, please.
You can watch Community Cop every Tuesday at 5 p.m. That's Manhattan Neighborhood Network, manhattanneighborhoodnetwork.org. Once you plug it in, you can go with M&M, but just for purposes, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, and you can go right to the live stream for Community Cop anywhere in the country, and you can watch it and call in. We offer 1 hour from 5 to 6, and at 5:30 around that time, we start entertaining phone calls. So it's a real good show. It's independent. We say what we like. The subject matters are all relevant to our community, and just tune in and let us know, you know, your concerns or your criticism.
All right. Wonderful. And Sister Keisha, in case you don't know, I'm recruiting you. and not only that, inviting you to join us in October. We're doing Million Women March Week here in Philly from October the 20th through the 27th. We'll be getting ready to let people see what our MWM 2020, what we call Black Print, is about. Mm. And it's going to, you know, include, of course, stuff that's going on all over the country and even on an international level. And so we're building a global sisterhood so that, you know, we can represent ourselves in the way that we need to worldwide. And again, Sister Keisha, we're getting ready to prepare a delegation because next year at the UN is the 25th anniversary of the UN conference that took place in Beijing, China.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
And they'll be in New York for that 25th year anniversary observance. And what we found in the past 2 years is that there's very few African Black women from North America that reside in North America that's representing up in there. There needs to come in from all over the world. Well, women from all over the world come, but we always, you know, get with the sisters from the diaspora, but they come in from all over. But when you look for the sisters from the U.S. and Canada, we are not represented. So our issues, our concerns, and so forth are not really voiced in there. Until now. Until now.
Sister Filet. Mm.
Yes, ma'am.
Sister Filet?
Mm-hmm.
At another time, maybe I could share with you, I was at the Fourth World Women's Conference in Beijing, China. In 1995.
Wow.
So I did a paper for Mumia. So at some point, you know, you're going to talk about that conference. I would be delighted to tell you about that conference as well.
Absolutely wonderful. The elder, of course, that we work with is the elder who was the confidant of Queen Mother Moore. And, of course, Queen Mother Moore was there. And so I've been allowed to continue the legacy from the Black Hand side of Queen Mother Moore.
That's Sister Dolores, right? From Harlem? Sister Dolores,
yes,
from Harlem?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. But to be very clear, and we talked about this, Queen Mother, Dr. Dolores Blakely, of course, represents Queen Mother all across the board. But what we realized is that the voice that speaks to and about things that is referencing a certain spirit, like from RNA or from Encobra, or from, you know, those kinds of areas, that was not being represented to any great degree. So in our discussions, that was understood, and as such, I asked permission to continue as such and was given that.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because, see, we can't have that. We can't have it. Mm. Queen Mother Moore represented a whole lot of things, so for there just to be representation on the international piece and that whole, you know, thing that of course she was so very, very well known for and appreciated for, but the representation with, say, like Robert Williams or, you know, with Malcolm X or whatever, that was not being covered.
Mm.
You understand? And so we saw that and said, you know, can we proceed in that manner, in that light,
right,
in that spirit, and we were granted that.
Okay.
Well, so whenever you need me, sister, you got me. You'll call me, you'll give me the particulars, and we'll make it happen. But for what Mike has now given her the name, our war correspondent sister, I'm going to tack on investigative journalist. But
all right.
Through Sister Filet, if you would let me get your contact information, we would love to have you here in New York to let the people know what it is that you reported.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes, we have.
Absolutely. We will make it happen. Not a problem.
Okay.
All right, family. Well, as usual, because we are solution-oriented, as well as making certain that we're able to provide information, motivation, and inspiration for liberation, I think we've done our job tonight, and I certainly feel good about that. So, again, I want to thank, of course, our sister Omi for bringing us this investigative report. And,
no,
and
thank
definitely
you, sister.
My sister. Oh, indeed, sister. You know, much love, always. And, of course, Lakeisha, always on fire. And definitely our brother Mike Graves, who, you know, we just can't say enough. And Sister Coca, thank you always. And you, family, all of you who are listening, who might not have said a word tonight, but we feeling you. And we certainly appreciate all of you. Yeah, we definitely feeling y'all. We feeling the love.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We feel, you know, y'all heard what was said tonight and embraced it, and we're thankful for that because in doing so, we're all getting stronger and are able to fight even harder or better. Let's put it that way. So, again, we thank you all. We're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you, and that is in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. But remember, there can be no real peace, meaning Hotep, until there is truly irreversible justice, meaning Ma'at.
Justice,
and as
right,
it was echoed
right.
Yesterday and every day so well, no justice.
No peace.
No peace.
All right. No justice.
No peace.
No justice.
No peace.
Okay.
Okay,
family.
All right.
Y'all be well.
To the sender. Together we shall win. We're out. Peace to you all.
All right.
All right.